So if you're here with us for the first time, we're so grateful that you would choose to join us this Sunday morning of all Sunday mornings. And we started on Good Friday a new series called Windows, and we've been talking about this idea, well, we started on Friday, and then we're going to continue it this week and for the next couple of weeks, that the resurrection of Jesus changes the windows through which we look at the world, changes the way that we view everything about our lives and about the people around us, and that if this event is actually true, if Jesus actually died on Friday and walked out of the grave on Sunday, then we really need to evaluate the way that we are seeing the world. And so whether you walked in this morning for the first time and you're just a little skeptical about the whole church thing, or you haven't been in church in a long time and you just came because it's Easter and somebody dragged you here and they promised that you'd get dinner afterwards and then, you know, the ham and all that kind of stuff, I'm just going to ask you for the next 30 minutes or so, just kind of hang with me and let's together investigate this just as a possibility. Just as a possibility, what if Jesus died on Friday and then Jesus rose again on Sunday? What if that actually happened? And then I'm just going to ask you just to kind of walk with me through that. And we've got about 30 minutes left together. And then at the end, we're going to share communion together. And I will kind of walk you through that. I realized as I was getting ready for this series of messages, and particularly this message for Easter Sunday morning, I am something of a walking, living, breathing contradiction. And here's what I mean by that. When I say I'm a walking, living, breathing contradiction, is that in most every area of my life, I am a see it to believe it kind of guy. Does anybody else see it to believe it kind of person? Right? So when it comes to relationships, I need a long runway of experience with people before I will really trust you. And when it comes to even simple things like the stuff that I buy, I need to see kind of a long runway of experience in history so that I know that I'm not wasting my money when I put it down on a certain product or a certain item. I am, in just about every single area of my life, I am a see it to believe it kind of guy. But when it comes to the central event of Christianity and the thing that we talk about on Easter Sunday morning, I realized as I was putting this message together, I'm not really all that much of a see it to believe it kind of guy. Because when it comes to the central event of Christianity, that on Friday, Jesus was crucified, and then on Sunday morning, Jesus was alive, I've never seen that, and yet I believe it. I've never seen a living, risen Jesus. I've just kind of taken others' word for it. I've never seen it, and it's never made me skeptical at all. In fact, this is just total intellectual honesty this morning. I have never seriously doubted that Jesus rose from the dead on an Easter Sunday morning. I never wrestled with it. I never struggled with it. And I would be wrong to tell you that I've had like these major crises of faith throughout the course of my life where I really seriously doubted that Jesus was alive. In fact, what happened was I woke up this Easter Sunday morning like I have every Easter Sunday morning for the last 14 years. And I got ready to talk to a group of people, some of whom I know were going to walk through the door on an Easter Sunday morning and were going to be incredibly skeptical. And I prepared myself to tell the most incredible thing that I've ever believed in my life, that a man died on Friday and that on Sunday morning he was alive and up and walking around meeting with his disciples and talking to them. I've never seriously doubted, and I got ready this morning to say that to a bunch of people that I know that some of you are going to find that really hard to believe. It's pretty incredible, isn't it? I mean, and you would be okay and you would be right to be a little bit skeptical when you walked in the door. And so that, just me saying that I've never seriously doubted, that may put us immediately on opposite ends of a certain spectrum, right? Because for some of you, you walked in this morning and you are very skeptical about this central claim because you know kind of the story. You may have been in church, you know, when you were a kid, or it may have been, you know, several years ago, but you kind of know the outline of what we're going to talk about today. Jesus died on Friday and then he was alive again on Sunday. And you came in carrying some skepticism, some doubt, and just some kind of, you know, I'm not so sure if I can really buy that. And you know what I'm going to talk about this morning, and you kind of already chose to tune me out. And so I'm just going to ask you to kind of tune back in just for a minute, because here's what I think. I think that we might need each other. I think that we might need each other this morning. I think that a person like me who believes and has never really seriously doubted that Jesus died on Friday and rose again on Sunday, see, I think I need you because I think I need to hear that there are people in the world who look at that with some real incredible kind of eyes and they kind of look at that and say, I'm not so sure I can buy that. Maybe I need to see a little bit more. Maybe I need to hear a little bit more. I need you to walk in here this morning and I need you to be here. And so this is a totally safe place if you're skeptical this morning. Totally safe place if you are a little doubting this morning. Here's what you might need from me, because you might dismiss me as naive. You might say, well, that's really, you know, I mean, you're really simple-minded just to buy that whole thing just because somebody else told you. And so here's what I need from you, and here's what maybe you need from me. You need to maybe just open up your mind and open up your heart just a little bit and ask yourself this question, what if it's possible? What if it actually happened the way that we say that it happened? And so this morning, what we're going to do, I hope, is to create a little bit of tension in the room. Doesn't everybody love tension in the room? We're going to create a little bit of tension in the room because we would be so dishonest if we were not to say this morning that there are people who are all in this morning who came here, walked in the doors this morning and said, I believe with my whole heart that Jesus is alive. And we would be dishonest if we also didn't say that there were some people who walked in this morning and said, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure. I'm a little skeptical. Maybe I'm totally skeptical. Or maybe I'm somewhere in between. Maybe I'm a believing skeptic. Or maybe I'm a little bit of a skeptical believer this morning. I'm going to ask us to create some tension in our hearts. For those of us who are all in, let's remember what it was like to maybe be on the outside of faith looking in. Let's remember what it felt like to be on the outside, having disconnected from church yourself or having walked away from faith yourself. Let's remember what it was like to kind of feel like we were on the outside looking in on an Easter Sunday morning and thinking, I'm not so sure if I can buy this whole thing. And for those of us who are a little bit skeptical and we've got the doubts and we've got kind of the questions in our minds, let's create some tension around this idea that what new windows are open to you if Jesus is actually alive and if Jesus is actually alive. Who he said he was. We're going to be in John chapter 20. John chapter 20 this morning. And the beginning of John chapter 20 tells a very similar story to what the other gospel writers tell in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They all record these central events of Jesus' life. They record that on Good Friday, Jesus was crucified. He died a criminal's death. They buried him in a borrowed tomb. And then on Sunday morning, some of Jesus' disciples went to the tomb to prepare his body for its final burial. And when they arrived at the tomb on Sunday morning, they found that his body was not where it was supposed to be. That Jesus was crucified Friday. Some of them saw it. Some of them had heard about it. And then they saw him and witnessed him be buried in the tomb. And then they walked over there on Sunday morning and he wasn't there. And interestingly enough, right, because we've got 2,000 years of history, and so, you know, maybe you grew up in a church where they said, he is risen, and you said, he is risen indeed, and we believe that, and we've kind of bought into that. But the first disciples, their initial reaction when they walked to the tomb and saw the body of Jesus wasn't there was not, oh my goodness, praise God, Jesus resurrected from the grave. Their first reaction was, where did they put him? Where did they put him? Who moved him? Because somebody clearly messed around with this stuff. Somebody clearly got involved in this situation. Their first reaction was not, I believe that Jesus rose from the grave, because they're just like you and they're just like me. They know that people don't die on Friday and then walk out of tombs on Sunday. Right? I mean, that still hasn't changed. We got thousands of years of history between us and them. Some things don't change. People don't die on Friday and then live again on Sunday. And so John 20 tells us this beginning part of the story of the disciples kind of finding out piece by piece about what happens. And then John records that the disciples were gathered together in a room and Jesus appeared to them. And when Jesus appeared to them, he showed himself to them. He said, peace be with you. He talked about giving them the Holy Spirit and giving them this commission for them to go out into the world. And then there are 10 of Jesus' disciples, 10 of his 12 that are there. One, Judas, is not there because he's already hanged himself. And the other guy who's not there, you may have heard of. Ever heard of Thomas? Yeah, have you ever, you've heard of Thomas. Here's why. This is what it says in John chapter 20, verses 24 to 25. We're going to pick it up there. It says, now Thomas, also known as Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. And so the other disciples told him, we have seen the Lord. But he said to them, unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I'm not buying it. That's my little paraphrase. Until I can prove for myself with the senses that God has given me that Jesus is alive, I am not taking your word for it. I need to see it to believe it. And as Thomas is sitting there, Thomas kind of gets this bad rap, right? Because you've heard of Thomas, and you know that there's another word that goes along with Thomas's name, right? Begins with a D. Doubting Thomas. Anybody heard of doubting Thomas? Well, that's where doubting Thomas came from, right? Because there's 10 guys sitting in a room saying to Thomas, Jesus is alive. We saw him. And Thomas says, I'm not buying it until I actually see Jesus walk into the room when I'm there. Because you guys can have all the faith that you want because you said you saw him. But until I see him, I'm not buying it. But here's the thing. Thomas gets the bad rap, right? Because we call him doubting Thomas. Guess what? The other 10 guys didn't believe until they saw either. Right? Did you catch that in the story? Like no one runs to the tomb and says, Jesus is alive. Everyone runs to the tomb and said, where did they put Jesus? None of the other 10 guys saw it, or believed it until they had seen it first themselves either. And so Thomas gets the bad rap when I think Thomas just says what most of us are thinking. Right? Can we agree with that? At some point or another, Thomas says what most of us are thinking. If I see it, I'll believe it. If I could touch his hands, and I could see where they put the nails into his hands on Friday when they crucified him, then I'd believe it. If I could put my hand in his side where they pierced him with a spear, I would then believe it. And for some of us, we would say, well, you know what? If they would just, you know, kind of stack up enough evidence for me, if the History Channel would do the documentary that says, once and for all, yes, Jesus resurrected from the grave, I would then believe it. If they could just kind of order everything in front of me, they could put all of the information out there, then I'm in, right? The evidence is great enough. There's enough for me to taste, touch, and see, and feel. Then I'll buy it. Let's pick it up in verse 26. A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Let's just stop for just 1 minute. 1 week. Think about that week. Think there was any tension among the disciples that week? Right? Because you got 10 guys saying, Thomas, Jesus is alive. And Thomas saying, I'm not buying it until I see it. I'm not in. I think there was a group of mixed believers and skeptics in Jesus' first original disciples. They were there. 1 week goes by. Thomas saying, I'm not believing it until I see it. The other disciples saying, Thomas, he's alive. I'm telling you. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, peace be with you. Same thing he said to him the first time. And then he said to Thomas, put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting. Believe. And as John tells the story of these skeptics and believers together, the way that John tells the story, he says Jesus comes back a week later and he doesn't come back for the 10 who are already believing. Does he? I mean, the way Jesus comes back, he doesn't come back to reaffirm all of those people who said, yes, Jesus is alive. He came back for the one person in the room who doesn't believe it. And he walks into the room and he says, you're the one person who's left out. You're the one person who's on the outside looking in. You're the one person who's trying to kind of peer through the window of faith. And you're not seeing it and you're not getting it. And Jesus comes just for him. And John tells the story and writes the story just so that we can understand that Jesus was concerned with the person who was doubting. Jesus was concerned with the person who was skeptical. And Jesus was concerned with the person who wasn't all in yet. That's why Jesus comes back. Not for the 10, but just for the one. And here's what he knows about Thomas. He knows that Thomas has spent 3 years of his life pursuing Jesus. He spent 3 years of his life walking everywhere that Jesus has gone, listening to everything that Jesus has said, hearing and watching everything that Jesus has done as he's healed the multitudes, as he's fed the thousands, as he's done all of these amazing, incredible things. Thomas has had an eyewitness view to all of it. And so Jesus comes walking into the room to Thomas with those 3 years of history and those 3 years of background. And so instead of reading this, and sometimes I think we do, sometimes we read it like Jesus is saying, "Hey, Thomas, you dummy. What's wrong with you? Right? Thomas, why don't you believe? All the other guys believe. Why are you on the outside? Hey, Thomas, when are you going to get with the program? Hey, Thomas, when are you going to buy in?" Right? Sometimes that's how we want to read these verses in 26 and 27, but I don't think that's what Jesus is saying. I think Jesus comes back looking for Thomas so that he can say, "Hey, Thomas, those 3 years of your life that you have been investigating me, you've been walking around, you've been following me, you've been listening to everything that I've said, I don't want you to waste those years of your life. I want you to be with me. I want you to come and I want you to follow me." So I think Jesus speaks words of comfort to Thomas, good old doubting Thomas. And he says, "Thomas, I almost expect this." It's almost like Jesus is not surprised that Thomas has doubts. It's almost like Jesus is not surprised that Thomas is skeptical. It's almost like Jesus isn't surprised that Thomas is still looking at the world through windows of fear and doubt, through the Good Friday kind of window where the Messiah that he thought he was following had been crucified and buried. It's almost like Jesus isn't thrown off by people's doubts. Amazing. Almost like Jesus isn't thrown off by people not believing. Almost like Jesus would go after them intentionally. And so this is what he says, "Thomas, check it out. Come look. You said, I know what you said. You said you needed to touch where the nails went into my hands. So go ahead, touch where the nails went into my hands. You said you needed to put your hand into my side where the spear went into my side. So go ahead, do what you need to do. Investigate this, check it out. Look for all of the evidence that you need to believe that I am alive, that I'm standing here in front of you. And if you will look for the evidence that you need, I think you'll find it," Jesus says. "If you look for it and really seek it, you'll find it. And if you don't, and if you just say, 'You know what, I'm not buying it, it's too incredible, it's too unbelievable, I don't really want to look at it,' if you decide that, because if you look at this world through the windows of faith and you say, 'If Jesus is really alive, then my life needs to change.' And if you decide in that moment to say, 'If that's true, I'm still not going to push closer. I'm still not going to look at this any deeper,' then here's the deal. Jesus gives you permission to do it. So that's your choice. You can look at it, you can pursue after it, and you can choose to walk away from it. But what he says to Thomas is, he says, "Here's the deal. I want you to be with me. I came back so that you could come with me." So as he's given him this invitation to kind of investigate, check this out, he also gives him a command. He says, "You need to stop doubting and you need to believe. You need to stop doubting and you need to believe. You need to stop choosing to look at the world through the really limited window that you are choosing to look at the world with. You need to stop looking at the world through those windows of doubt and fear and skepticism, and you need to choose to look at the world through a different window, even if you just investigate the possibility that the other window exists. This is what you need to do. He says, I want you to come with me. And from this moment on, Thomas, you're not going to be able to follow me just because you see me. If you want to follow me, it's going to require that you take a step of faith and that you believe. From here on out, Thomas is not going to see Jesus anymore. From here on out, Thomas isn't going to be able to touch his hands and put his hand in his side. He's not going to have physical contact with Jesus from this moment on. At this point, from here on out, it's all about faith. It's all about trust. And it's all about belief. And in verse 28, this is what Thomas says. Thomas said to him, "My Lord, my God." You know what I find is interesting? Thomas didn't need to do what he thought he would need to do. See, Thomas had built up in his mind this idea of these are the things, these are the marks that I need to check off in order for me to really buy into this belief that Jesus is alive. But when Jesus walks into the room and Jesus stands in front of him, Thomas doesn't need any of it. He doesn't go up and put his hands where the nail marks were. And he doesn't go up and put his hand inside of Jesus' side. He just falls down in front of Jesus and says, "I see you. You are my Lord and you are my God. Not just you are the risen one. Not just you are alive even though you were dead on Friday. But because you were dead on Friday and now you're alive on Sunday, you are my God. Everything that you've been saying to us for the last 3 years, I'm in." I don't know what happened. It just kind of clicked in front of him. He finally sees it for what it is. And all of a sudden, Thomas says, "You're who you said you were all along. I don't need to do what I thought I needed to do in order to believe. All of my boxes didn't get checked." And here's the reality, right? For some of us, we came in here a little bit skeptical. I don't know if God is ever going to check every single one of our boxes. I'm just not sure we get that. And at some point, what he does is he comes to us and he says, "Look, you can investigate, you can pursue this, you can follow after this, and then at some point, you're still going to have to trust me. You're still going to have to take a step of faith. And you're going to have to choose to turn away from the window of doubt, fear, and skepticism. And you're going to have to choose to look at the world through a window of faith." Pick it up in verse 29. Jesus told him, "Because you've seen me, you've believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." Blessed are those. See, Thomas, there are going to be some people who are going to come to God with their check boxes, and they're going to look to check everything off. And at some point, they're going to realize there's way too long of a list of check marks, and they're not ever going to check them all off. And they are not going to see, and they're still going to believe. And for some of us, we are sitting here this morning, and we are evidence of what John says that Jesus said to Thomas. We are sitting here, we've never seen the risen Jesus. I'll just get that out of the way. I have never seen the risen Jesus. Okay? Anybody else seen him? I haven't. I've never, physically touched the nail marks in his hands. I've never put my hand into his side. But somehow, something has happened in my life to make me believe that what these guys said is true. And so I don't think Jesus is condemning Thomas because he was struggling with it. I think he was just encouraging those of us who will at some point in the future believe even without seeing. Here's what John says in verse 30. This is a little editorial comment that John adds at the end of this account. It says, "Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written for one reason, so that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing, you might have life in his name. John says, let's just get this clear. The whole reason I wrote this account of Jesus' life from beginning to end, the whole reason I wrote the story about Jesus being crucified on Friday and being risen again on Sunday is not because I had a great story that I wanted to tell. I've written everything that I've written so that when you read it, whether it was 50 years later or whether it was 2,000 years later, so that when you read this, that God, by his Spirit, would sort of provoke something, spark something inside of your heart, and when you read it, you would choose to turn away from the windows of doubt and fear that you've been looking at the world through, and that you would press your face up to the window of faith and say, I'm not sure if this is real, I'm not sure if this actually happened, but I'm going to look through these windows and I'm going to see if what I see makes any sense when I start looking through the windows of faith and I leave behind the other windows of my life. John wrote his gospel for people who are skeptical. And he wrote his gospel for people who are struggling and doubting to believe in Jesus. None of the other gospel writers, Matthew, Mark, or Luke, tell the story of Thomas. But John tells the story of Thomas. John, who was sitting in the room when Jesus walked back in the second time and didn't look at any of the other 10 and just went right for Thomas, John writes the story and says, here's why I included Thomas. Because Thomas would not be the last skeptic to walk into a room and ask whether or not Jesus was really alive. Because John knew that Thomas would not be the last guy sitting in a group of people who are already in, who would be saying, I'm not going to buy it until I can see it. But John knew that there would be other men and other women who for years, centuries, millennia, would walk into rooms asking whether Jesus is really alive or not. And that John, as he writes this story, says, look, Jesus has come for us, all of us, the skeptics, the doubters, the believing skeptics, and the skeptical believers. He pulled us all into the room. He said, I'm here for you because I want you to believe. And I want you to choose to look through a new window of faith. And I want you to choose that as you look through that new window of faith, or maybe the old window of faith that you kind of got rid of some point in the past in your life, when you look through that window and you see that there is a world in which the Son of God would come to earth, die on a cross on Friday, rise again on a Sunday, if you could look at the world through that window, it changes everything. For the way you see the world, it changes everything. Because if Jesus is alive, then you need a new window to look at the world through. The old one that you've been looking at, it doesn't work if Jesus is alive. The old way that you've been seeing yourself and others around you, it won't serve you very well for very long if Jesus is really alive. And so maybe for you, for some of you today, the window cracks open just a little bit. And you press your face to that window of faith and you say, you know what? I need to see if this is really true or not. And you press your face to it. And as you press your face to it, we sing the songs and we listen to the message and we do everything that we're doing this morning and we declare Jesus is alive. Maybe God, by his Holy Spirit, starts to spark something in your heart. And you say, you know what? I don't know why. I can't prove it. I can't rationally make sense of all of this. But something is happening in my heart. And I believe that that's true. And I am ready to turn away from my old window of doubt and fear. And I'm ready to press my face up against the pane of the window. It says faith in a risen Son of God. Faith in a Jesus who died Friday and rose again on Sunday. And maybe for others of you, here's all you're ready to do. You're just ready to say, I will entertain the possibility. See, some of you, you say, I'm skeptical, I'm doubting, and I'm not so sure I'm going to buy the whole thing, but you know what? I'll keep looking. Maybe for you, all you do is take one step closer to the window of faith. And you're still 100 feet away from it, but today all you do is say, I'll just move one step closer. I will keep moving towards this. I will keep moving in this direction. I will keep deciding to accept that maybe this is possible, and that maybe if this is possible, that the way that I'm looking at the world needs to change, and that as you take just one step closer, maybe that gets just a little bit clearer in your heart and in your mind today. And I am absolutely convinced that Jesus is here for every single one of us. For every single one of us. And so all you decide maybe for some of you is I'm going to keep checking it out. And maybe what you decide is next week I'll come back and I'll look again through the window and I'll just see if when I look through the window if I see anything more clearly than I did last week. I would love to have you back. In fact, here's what I would say. It was a shameless plug. I would love for this to not be the last Sunday that you show up here. Because what I would love for you to understand is you are in a place where whether you're a skeptical believer, believing skeptic, hardcore skeptic, you're welcome here to keep investigating, to keep checking out whether what we say is true or not. And here's what I believe. I believe that if you sincerely seek it, Jesus will meet you, just like he met Thomas. I believe that Jesus will meet you just like he met Thomas, and he will show you what you need to see in order to believe. This morning, what we're going to do is we are going to share communion together, and we're going to share communion this morning as a response to this idea that in the resurrection, Jesus has opened to us a window of faith through which we can look at the world. That Jesus has invited every one of us to lay down our windows of doubt and fear. And some of us have already done it. We did it a long time ago. And we're here this morning because we just want to celebrate Jesus is alive. And some of us walked in this morning with that skepticism and doubt and that fear. And Jesus is opening the window to all of us. He's saying, I want you to come and I want you to follow. I want you to stop doubting and I want you to believe. And so as we receive communion this morning, here's what we're saying. We're saying what Thomas said when Jesus appeared to him. We're saying, Jesus, you are my Lord and my God. You are the Messiah who died for me on Friday and rose again for me on Sunday. You are my Lord and you are my God. And so here's what we're going to do this morning. I want to give you permission to not say that yet. Is that okay? It's okay if you're sitting here this morning and you say, you know what? I'm not ready to say, Jesus, you are my Lord and my God. I'm not there yet. And if you're not there yet this morning, I don't want you to feel like you've got to walk forward and you've got to receive these elements, because here's what I would hate for you to do. I would hate for any of us to say or do something because we think everybody else is saying or doing something. Because you know what? I don't think Jesus is after insincere confessions of our faith. Does that make sense? I think he wants the real thing. And if you are ready to join with that and say, Jesus, you are my Lord and my God, then as we receive communion this morning, I want to invite you forward. And I want you to share that with us. And if you're not, that's okay. You don't have to move forward. You can stay in your seat, and I promise no one will look at you funny. And I promise no one will say, hey, did you see who didn't go up for communion today? I promise, because if they do, I will come after them. I will hunt them down. You do not want to mess with me. No. The reason we do that is because we understand that Jesus has gathered together all of us. And some of us are at different points in our journey following Jesus, and he understands it. He calls us to stop doubting and believe. And he makes it ready for us, but he doesn't push it. And he doesn't make us do it when we're not ready.